It is Friday, July 22nd, 2005, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today we're talking with dentist Henry Ramirez about the newest and greatest in the technology of teeth. And of course, it is time for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name is Lyle Troxel. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KOSP. Today, on our program, after a spot of geek news, we're speaking with Dr. Henry Ramirez about the latest and greatest in the teeth technology, the high tech of dentistry. That's during this show. During the second half of the show, we'll welcome you to join our conversations. The phone numbers, 476-2800, or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. You can go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us if you'd like to do that through email. And I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about half an hour. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxel. In the air with me is Geek Sean Cleveland, Senior PR Marketing Manager for NetCell. Sean, welcome to Geek Speak, and thanks for being here to do news with me.
Yeah, good morning, Lyle.
We're going to, and actually in the air room is also Henry. If you'd like to speak about any of the news stories, you're welcome to do that today, Henry.
Thanks.
We'll be talking to you about 15, 10 minutes. Okay, Sean, what's your first and greatest news story for today?
Well, I don't know about greatest.
I like the word greatest today, I think. I keep on doing that.
Well, Microsoft has announced the name of their next Windows operating system.
So it's not Longhorn, that's just a...
Longhorn was a code name.
Okay.
It is Windows Vista.
Vista. Okay. I will reserve judgment until I have more coffee.
Microsoft associates it with clear, confident, connected.
Far away.
Actually, a beta will be released August 3rd, and they expect that the final product will hit us about summer 2006.
Very cool. So it's actually coming.
Yeah, before that, there will be a second beta, and then a release candidate, and then, boom, the final product.
So XP will go away in this time next year.
XP goes away to be replaced by Vista.
All right.
And to give you a little idea of what it can bring you.
Yeah, we got it. When we get the beta, the alpha and everything out, we got to get a copy and take
it. Yeah.
We gotta,
so there's a story up on Ars Technica. I don't know if you've ever gone to that site.
I have. Oh, yeah, it's a great site.
It's the art of technology. ArsTechnica.com. Very cool site run by a bunch of guys back in Boston.
It's very applicable to the program that I run at BC.
So it's like all these MIT students got together and created this really cool tech geek site.
Yeah, and an art site as well.
So they talk about, they have a story, and they talked about Vista and what you can expect from it. About 15% faster application performance over
That's
XP.
Good.
It'll boot Windows, or Windows Vista will boot 50% faster. And it allows PCs to resume from standby in 2 seconds.
Nice.
Kind of like a Macintosh. it'll allow users to patch systems with 50% fewer reboots. It reduces the number of system images required by 50%. And it's going to enable companies to migrate users 75% faster than they can with existing version of Windows.
I'm so glad that something was other than 50%. So 70% faster to migrate.
So, you know, I don't know. If they can meet that, wow, it might actually be worth installing.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we'll see. I did a lot of installation last night and working on machines because we're getting ready for a small non-public, LAN party this weekend, and I was running XP Professional, which, you know, I'm actually pretty impressed with the installation process. It runs pretty smooth.
It's not bad.
It's a mess.
It's pretty stable for about the first 10 minutes or so. You know,
that was the thing. Once I installed it, I had to get it was the Surface Pack 2 version, so I didn't have to install that. But I went ahead and did updates, and
yeah.
I recommend everybody, of course, if you've got Windows machine, make sure you do Windows updates, and you can do that through your Start menu through Microsoft Update.
Now, to be fair, I don't have a problem with XP.
No, I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
And one thing I did about a week ago at a recommendation of a friend of mine was to turn off the go to classic mode on Windows, and I think it's running faster. I mean, it seems to be running faster.
Yeah. Depends on what kind of video card you have. If you're playing games and you're finding, oh, you know, I could get a little more performance out of this, yeah, you might want to disable
a lot
of that visual stuff in the background.
How do you do that, Sean? You're better at the Windows machine.
You go to display properties in the control panel, or you right click on the desktop and select properties, and through in that interface you can
I think it's through desktop is what it's called, or maybe it's Yeah, I think it's desktop. But basically,
it's appearance.
Basically,
and what
appearance.
You want to do is under Windows and Buttons, it says Windows XP style. You can choose Windows Classic style, and that'll change the whole
and it makes it less
desktop, yeah.
Less fluffy, less like balloon-like.
Yeah, it'll make it look a little
older.
Retro.
Looks like 98. But it seems to be, there's something about, I don't know, I'm starting to feel like the interface should get away from me, and I feel like Microsoft XP's tall borders are kind of intrusive.
Now, you know, that's going just the opposite direction with Vista.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The desktop will be 3D.
Strange.
Yeah. To really see... what they're going to be offering, you're going to need a video card, they're saying, with at least 256 megs of cache on it, you know, and something newer to really see the beauty of Windows Vista. So we'll see. Should be interesting. A lot of people want that, I think, because Macintosh, you know, they've got a beautiful desktop.
Right.
So another story, I don't know if you heard of a company called Agia. Lyle?
I think I've heard of Agia.
I think we should have them on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Very interesting technology. They've got this physics engine. It's a chip called the PhysX.
PhysX?
Yeah. What it is it's a physics processing unit. It resides outside of the graphics processing unit, NVIDIA.
Ah.
It's got the GPU. So this is the PPU. You've got the SPU.
Wait, what's the SPU?
That's what we make. The storage processor,
okay.
An Edsel. And then Creative Labs just came out with the audio processor, the APU. I don't know if they call it that.
But I
doubt it. It's called the X-Fi, and it's an audio processor. That's their next generation. And supposedly, their press release just claimed that the X-Fi audio processor will increase game performance by 17%. An
wow.
Audio chip can increase game performance. I don't know. Sounds interesting.
I think that's
that was another release this week,
right.
So we'll see what happens with that.
Right.
But Agia, with this physics processor, just got picked up by Sony, and it will be in the PlayStation 3 console. They're going to use it to enhance the graphics on the chip. They're using the Cell chip from IBM. We know about that.
Right.
And I don't know who's doing their video. Maybe ATI? But anyway, with this Agia physics processor, it can simulate thousands of interacting fragments and create a greater illusion of reality. What this means is they can affect the behavior of upwards of 40 to 50,000 particles in the game.
Wow.
So they can actually display disintegrating walls, gelatinous characters, windswept hair,
nice.
Loose flowing clothing, realistic display of damage in racing car games, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, very cool.
So
that would be great. I mean, I'm surprised it's not called the Newton or something.
From what I understand, this chip offloads the floating point, the messy math, off the graphics.
At least of the physics.
Yeah.
It's
got a whole API, so the game has to be written to take advantage of this chip's features.
Well, it sounds like it's something you'd want to do. You want to get that as fast as possible.
Yeah.
Now, earlier this week, Sean, you sent me a great article on high-definition 1080p. What is high-definition 1080p?
Oh, God.
I know it's a long story, but I want to touch on it. Basically, high-def still hasn't really been finalized.
I didn't memorize the specs in the story, but don't be wary. All I have to say is be very wary when you go to a store. If you're going to buy a new high-end TV set and it says 1080p, now what that means is 1,080 lines of resolution, progressive. So there's 1080i, that's the HDTV standard, but that's interlaced, which means you don't really get, you're getting 540 lines times two.
Okay.
So on a big
every
screen,
other frame, it renders half of
so
it.
So it's not as quite as sharp as a 780p. 780p is 780 lines resolution. Progressive, every line is different. So progressive is like a computer screen. Interlace is like a television screen.
Traditional television.
And what it is, what that means is just drawing every other line in the interlaced. You don't
so
really want that. The refresh
wrong?
Isn't as good.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't have the sharpness that you do
right.
with progressive. So now everyone, the new buzzword is 1080p. You get 1,080 lines in progressive. But the problem is no one's transmitting in that.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. The TVs that support 1080p only do it at 24 frames per second. And even then, the TV will most likely downsample. Downsample to 540p.
Uh-huh.
To get the 1080p, they said at 60 frames per second, so you wouldn't get a headache to see the blinking. Because even if it were at 24 frames, yeah, you would see that. That's
right.
You know, the human eye at 30 frames per second is comfortable.
Right.
60 to do what the spec says, it would take twice the amount of bandwidth.
So
and TV
happen.
Could not have them handle that. So,
okay, so,
so there's
careful.
An article. You know what we should do is link to it up on
all
Geek Speak.
Right, yeah,
no I'll shoot it to you. And people should read that before they go out and buy a television set.
All right, Sean, thank you for updating me on that. I just thought that the HD thing would be a good thing to keep on.
No, I thought you were going to mention the HP.
Well, now the HP. Now, do you have that? Because that's great. This is a new
I do,
HP.
Yeah. So HP announced a new breakthrough printing technology.
It's not breakthrough. They just put a whole bunch of more inkjet injectors on the head of the
So, you know,
printer.
You've got nozzles that spray the ink on the paper. Yeah, it would be nice. The more you have, the faster the printing would be, and the sharper the pictures would be. I don't know how many nozzles the printer has now, but HP has one with 3,900. So it's 5 years in the making. It took $1.4 billion in strategic R&D investment,
wow.
And basically they call it scalable printing technology.
And how fast is fast? Color photo 4x6 in how long?
Yeah.
Are you scanning the article? And
I am.
I'm making it
okay,
obvious.
Okay, here's the section. So it delivers 4x6 photos in 14 seconds.
Nice.
And it is of a quality that no other printer can match currently.
Nice.
So,
right. So Sean, you can go ahead and pick one of those up for me. Okay.
Yeah. You know, go to HP's... go to their newsroom. This was just announced last week.
Just announced. Again, we'll have to add this to the Geek Speaks page because it's obviously a quick link. But the article, the idea of printing really fast, high quality is exciting. But the whole spin that it's innovative, it's like, well, in as much as you're adding more, I mean, that's kind of like the it's a pretty regular thing to do to make things faster and better.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a pretty amazing little printer.
But it also, they're a lot smaller, so a lot better printing. Do you have one more news story before we go on with dentistry, the tech of dentistry?
Well, let's move on.
Let's move on. Yeah, good. Okay. So, Sean, about 2 months ago, you said, I've got a new dentist. He's amazing. Wow. And so you started just...
No, actually, Maggie.
Maggie did.
Maggie right? found
the
him.
Producer of GeekSpeak mentioned it.
And she just kept talking about... Okay, so she's got a phobia.
Of teeth.
Yeah, big time. Big
Who
time.
Doesn't? Come on.
So, yeah, but, you know, it's the kind of phobia that keeps you from the dentist for many, 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 many years. So she finally broke down and heard about Dr. Ramirez and the fact that you do such great work and you make a very comfortable environment and you specialize with people who have phobias with teeth. And she went and she had such a great time. I mean, really, she had a great time. So I decided to go down and check it out.
And
I was struck by... Oh my God!
Technology.
This is cutting edge technology.
Yeah, everything in there. So then I went over the last night to get a feel for it, and I was going to spend about a half an hour. We're there 2 hours talking about technology of dentistry and just the highest tech stuff, all integrated in the office, all making the person feel like they're part of it in some ways, which is very geeky. Had a great time, and Dr. Henry Ramirez, thank you, and welcome to Geek Speak.
Thank you.
So the first thing that when Sean mentioned to me this is that you make crowns in the office while the person's waiting, so no temporary crowns. And that's a big thing for relieving stress and pain
that
about
reduces
having
a full visit to the office
and
exactly.
3 weeks of pain most of the time at least.
Right. With the traditional methods of making crowns, you have to have a temporary, and the temporaries are cemented with temporary cement by nature, and so after about 48 hours, they're leaking bacteria. Underneath and
when you say leaking, you mean there's a crack between the crown and the tooth, and leaking means that the stuff can get in.
It's percolating. It's
okay.
Yes,
it's
exactly
going in there and getting into a place where the bacteria can go. Ooh, yummy!
To a fully exposed tooth.
Exactly, and your toothbrush can't follow. So
right.
There's no way for you to clean, and this causes a hyperemia, an inflammation, and this inflammation is what causes sensitivity. With so many of the crowns that are done,
right.
So people have come to regard having a crown simultaneous with the same as with a root canal.
So basically, you were saying yesterday that when what happens in inflammation when you're dealing with a nerve in a tooth is that normally things swell up in the body, and that nerve swells, but it can't because there's pressure. The tooth is hard, so it just gets packed in there, and that's where that kind of that highly sensitivity comes from.
Exactly. Part of the inflammatory reaction is swelling.
Right.
The other thing is that you can take anti-inflammatories, but the circulation is so small going in through the end of the root that hardly any of that medication actually reaches
where it's hurting.
Where it's hurting.
Yeah.
Unless you just systemically flood the body.
Okay. Now, the idea behind the whole capping thing, by removing the decay and stuff and putting other materials on, is that you're going to bond and you're not going to have that leaking. You're going to make sure that the tooth can't get bad stuff past the tough layer of the enamel. So what you're saying, I mean, basically the traditional capping is causing 3 weeks of exactly what you don't want to have happen.
Exactly, yes.
And 3 weeks is enough to cause some pain. And, of course, the reason that 3 weeks exists is that traditionally you model the tooth a little bit, you carve it down, you get an idea of what's going on, maybe you make a casting, you send this off to a laboratory, and they mold a tooth out of wax, and then, I mean, or out of a normal, like, ceramic or plastic, and that comes back in 3 weeks later, and then we're ready to do it again. So with your technology
in
the office...
Explain how does it go?
Well, the first problem is that when you come back in 3 weeks, you've got to be usually numbed again, because since the tooth is inflamed, it hurts. It's sensitive when you remove the temporary. And you just circumvent all of that misery. So the way that we do it is we image with a three-dimensional infrared camera your tooth after it's been prepared. And the preparation is totally different, because rather than cementing, we are bonding. So we're not relying upon mechanical undercuts, cabinetry maker sort of...
Right, you were describing yesterday, it really does sound like the traditional way is to make a physical bond like you would joint wood, and you like dovetailing kind of effects so that the two pieces slide together and can't get together removed physically. So this, you're not needing to do that because you're not cementing, you're bonding. So what's different about the preparation of the look of the tooth, if you will, or the look of what you carve out to make the tooth fit?
Well, the way that a crown is held on a tooth is with parallel walls. This creates an effect called the ferrule effect, and this prevents, this gives you resistance and retention, especially to lateral shear stresses. But when you're bonding, you need none of that. The bond strength is so strong that it essentially restores the tooth back to square one, the beginning.
Okay. Wow. So, and what about the material that's used? Is it just the same material that they would use if you sent it off to, you know, a lab to get made?
The material is exactly human enamel. It has, they found that mixing feldspathic porcelain with leucite, that they have a material that is now the same index of refraction, the same coefficients of expansion, same hardness as human enamel. And indeed, when you look at an X-ray of a ceramic restoration, it looks the same as enamel. The only telltale giveaway is a thin little line of the bonding resin.
Wow.
So you get the 3D model. First, you remove the decay. You kind of prep the tooth the way you want it, in as much as it's ready to have the other material bonded. So as much surface area of the original enamel you can keep on edge with this new material that you're going to be coming on, because the enamel is the good thing that bonds. And then you scan that with a infrared 3D imaging tool, which is just a little probe you put in the mouth and take a picture. And then you go over to your computer and you start working on what their mouth looked like, and what's the software and what's the process in that respect?
Well, it's a 3D CAD CAM program that is essentially my dental video game. And the beauty about practicing in Santa Cruz is that there's so many smart individuals here that they can appreciate it and actually take hand in designing their teeth. You know, if there's something that they want me to do, they many times have the same skills as I do to jump in and massage the proposal by the computer to maximize and the tooth to perfection.
And really, what it is, I mean, when you were showing it to me yesterday, it's funny because the system is, it's just a Windows machine in there, of course. It's running XP, which is kind of funny. And then it's got kind of a keyboard designed for you, which, you know, is just a really expensive thing that's designed so that the buttons are all there, but it's a keyboard. And then there's a trackball to actually do the moving of things and such. But what you have is, after that scan, you've got that exact duplicate of what the person has in their mouth, and then you make what the tooth should look like, maybe copying partially what a tooth next to it looks like, and then the computer has the actual segment that you need to create. But let me talk real briefly about the CAD program itself. When you're working on that, one of those major features is it's the size of the screen. It's not the size of a tooth, so you can see what's going on. And you were talking about how when you add material and remove material, because of the carving process, there was 20 microns, is that?
10 microns.
10 micron of difference of tooth levels. And you were saying that you get kind of, you get focused on the tooth when you see it big and you're trying to get it perfect to that 10 micron. What happens when you see the tooth after it gets out of the milling machine?
It's not even discernible to the human eye. In fact, the restorations are twice as good as anything that can be humanly made. One of the reasons, I think, is because traditionally when you have a crown made and they use modeling compound, there are always expansion and contraction problems with mm-hmm. the materials. So the model does not is not 100% what is actually in the mouth. And then the other problem is that the technician that's making the restoration does not exactly know how the tooth was prepared. Since I did the preparation no less than 3 minutes ago, it's very easy for me to remember all of the idiosyncrasies in that preparation. So I can outline the tooth preparation for the program perfectly.
Yeah. When you put a cap in my mouth, I watched you model my
tooth. Design
it. Uh-huh. Yeah. And it was kind of neat. You said, yeah, well, this wall, it even tells you, the machine told you where the substance wasn't thick enough. And you just kind of glop on a little and smooth it. And yeah, you're doing it at a level that is not, you can't even see it the human eye. But the fact that this machine could tell where the tooth would be stressed and where you would need to add compound, that sort of thing, was really amazing. Very powerful software. Mm-hmm.
So this machine is basically a machine that does the rendering CAD. You get some profiles in there.
So before we move on, let's talk about this software.
Okay.
And this part of the process. Where did it begin and how has it come along?
This machine is actually a standard issue in Germany in the dental schools. And I believe there's only one or two dental schools in all of the United States that is receiving this CAD CAM. And that's unfortunate, but it has been around for many years, probably a good 12 years at least. And it started out being very difficult to use, very onerous. You know, you could easily spend hours designing a single tooth and then have it not turn out right and have to start from scratch because you were working with sections, you know, serial sections, and trying to put it together in your own mind.
Oh, I see.
But recently they came out with the three-dimensional software, and that cut the learning curve just tremendously, where really anybody that is used to is a Nintendo-type person probably would have just a ball working with it if they were interested in teeth.
So the software, I didn't know it was a German-based thing where it's been, there's a giant industry behind it, which is great because you don't really want it. I mean, in medicine, it's nice to be on the cutting edge and as much as you get new stuff, but you also get the problems that exist on the cutting edge. So now you are in the United States on the cutting edge, but from the perspective of the tools and technology, they have been developed for a while. That's nice to have that stability behind you. Go ahead.
Well, the company is named Sirona, and that is the world's largest dental company supplier. And they really have had a very minor presence in the United States until probably 2 or 3 years ago. But I think we'll be seeing a lot more from Sirona. They have extensive Cerex distributed throughout Australia, North Africa, Europe, Scandinavia. If you go on planetcerex.com, it's on the web, you'll see that most of the of the proposals, and it's kind of a share site for dentists who use CEREC. Most of the proposals there are from other continents other than North America.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to GeekSpeak. My name's Lyle Troxell. We have Dr. Henry Ramirez in here talking about dentistry. We also have Sean Cleveland as one of the geeks. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.org.
This week in This American Life, Bob had a good job as an electrician, but he wanted to do something bigger. And he came up with an idea for an invention. Sat down with a bunch of physics books to see if it could work.
Of course, I never got to the invention because I found something else. It's something every Nobel Prize-winning physicist missed.
It's something Einstein got wrong. It's something Newton got wrong. That is, if Bob's right.
Catch This American Life Sunday at 10 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
KUSP's coverage of the Carmel Bach Festival presents Opening Night, recorded at 8 p.m. the night before at Sunset Theater in Carmel. Music of Bach and Beethoven is featured in this concert by the festival orchestra, chorus, choral, and vocal soloist conducted by Bruno Wheel. The Carmel Bach Festival on KUSP is this Sunday, July 24th at 11 a.m.
You're listening to GeekSpeak. If you have questions or comments, the time is now. We're going to keep our topic to dentistry. So the phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or use the internet, visit geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. And let's try to keep this show focused on dentistry. If you got something that's totally pressing and you're stressed about it, go ahead and give us a call. That's okay as well. This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing local and nationwide internet service, including DSL 6.0, spam filters, and virus protection. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. The geek this morning is Sean Cleveland. I'm Lyle Troxell. We are speaking with DDS, or Doctor in Dental Surgery, Henry Ramirez, who has a practice in Santa Cruz. He does have spots open for patients, and he does amazing technology. And if you're a geek in any nature, you're going to have a lot of fun in the office in just the respect of watching him work, not to mention the gear he'll give you while you're waiting, like goggles that play what kind of films are they? IMAX.
I have IMAX, yeah, DVDs.
DVD,
oh,
IMAX.
No way.
With little goggles.
That's new.
Well, yeah, see,
the
we'll
Olympus. Yes.
See, Sean, you were too busy watching.
I went off
doing,
and grabbed
so
my
cool.
CD, and he's got some... the headphones,
the Bose
noise canceling
headphones. I put those on, and those work very well for me.
Yeah. So there's a lot of options on the not paying attention to what what Henry's doing, but there's also the interesting stuff that he's doing, like this cadding of teeth and designing that so that it can be sent off or printed, if you will, in the other room on a 3D CAD program or 3D printing tool, which is pretty cool. It kind of looks like it's got like dental drills on it, very small little drills, two of these little robotic arms. And can you talk about what it looks like when it runs and how it does its thing?
Well, it has two diamond robotic arms, you're right. One's a cylinder, and they're both cylinders. One is pointed and one is flat. And they do kind of a ballet as they carve out of a solid block of the polyceramic material the designed restoration. They have 10 micron step motors, which make them just so incredibly accurate. It's really beautiful.
As we were saying, the 10 micron, when you're on screen and it's really big, you can kind of perceive a difference between that 10 micron. It's just enough to see it on screen really large, but once it's cut and stuff on the tooth, you wouldn't be able to tell.
Right. It takes about 12 to 16 minutes per restoration. And the machine is so intuitive with the software that if one of the diamond burrs is starting to wear or snaps off, it'll give you an error code and tell you which particular one is giving you trouble and walk you through replacing it, and it will start up where it left off. And
goodness.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, that is. Well, I was impressed that normally when you've got robotics, you have to have something that senses where the location is, unless you know you're on assembly line where everything's exactly the same every single time. You have to have sensors because the robot arm, you know, we have this amazing feedback system where you touch something, you know it right away. But for robotics, it's very hard to do that, especially for a tool like a drill bit. But yet, the way they figure things out is they kind of feel the mold thing with the just bringing the tools in, and they feel it somehow.
Yes, the burrs just step in until they touch the block, and they'll do that in several of the parameters of the block itself. And they're not only measuring the block, but they're also measuring the amount of wear on the diamond burrs themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And they keep track of how many units a certain burr has milled, so it gives you a heads up that whether or not to change, because as the burrs wear down, so does perhaps the sharpness of the restoration.
Right, and of course there's more heat generated and stuff. Now this is pretty similar for milling machines. There's just liquid pouring on this thing
yes.
the whole time.
And one of the beauties of how what finesse this machine has is that if you were to feel the diamonds on the burrs, it feels smooth. They're that small. And the reason that's able to cut such hard material and so many of the blocks is because the machinery is able to perfect the amount of pressure that it places with the amount of coolant.
Right.
And
right, so it's all doing very detailed work. Yeah. So kind of like a skilled technician would be with a hand planer on wood. You know, they know exactly how much to take off, and therefore the tool stays sharp. You're not digging into it. All that stuff that happens with tools when you use them slightly wrong doesn't happen in this situation because it's got this feedback system.
Exactly. If you were to hold a diamond burr that a dentist actually uses when he's milling the tooth, it's like 100 times rougher.
Right.
And that's, I think, simply because the human hand does not have the tactile feedback as far as controlling the amount of pressure placed while the milling is being done that this
right.
machine has.
Well, we don't have 10 micron sensitivity.
No, we don't have that. No, no.
Wow.
So the little the teeth that this blocks, is, and it's kind of got a drill bit base on it so you can snap into the machine, and then it's a block about 2 centimeters by 1 centimeter, depending on the size of tooth that you're actually going to mill. Like if it's a front tooth, it's kind of
fatter. Oh, and they have different colors too.
And different colors to match the teeth. So then in the front of the office, I don't know if it's always there, if it was just there because I was coming by, is this big jar of
It's always there.
That's great. I'll have a picture up later today. This big jar of these little stubs because you don't need use all the block. And it's
right.
kind of a kick to go, wow, he's kind of busy doing this work. And you were saying you actually have already given some away to people that have art projects or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. They can use them in found art because they are actually very beautiful pieces of ceramic with these highly machined, you know, end attachment
right.
parts.
Yeah. And of course, you'd have to, have, if you wanted to cut them or do anything with them, you'd have to have some diamond cutting tools.
Yes,
it's
it would be
so
very
tough.
Difficult.
But very cool seeing that big jar.
Yes. The material itself, what makes it so wonderful also is that it's made, it's highly compressed in a nitrogen environment, and so there is no porosity to it. And this is so much better than the usual laboratory work. Usual laboratory work many times can have air bubbles, and if multiple layers of the porcelain have to be laid down, those are also areas where you can have you know, failure of the porcelain.
Because wow. It's more like you're doing like layers of epoxy.
Sandwiching.
Kind of sandwiching
yes.
more and more stuff. And every time you do that, you have layers of imperfections in between. They can cause separations and things of that nature.
Exactly. And when you're layering porcelain, many times also, you have to use porcelains that fuse at lower and lower temperatures if you want to get a complete fusion. And that will change the ultimate physical characteristics of that restoration.
Right. All right, we got a call from King City. Tom, welcome to Geek Speak.
Yeah, hello.
Hello.
I want to thank you for taking my call. I have a permanent glued-on bridge on my front top teeth, and it the reason it was put there in the first place, I had two root canals that the teeth gradually darkened, and so I was having some other restorative work on the back teeth, and so the dentist went ahead and pulled those two root canals that teeth darkened and didn't look very attractive. So anyway, three other teeth were ground down to accommodate the
bridge.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you've got bridge work, and what's your question about?
Okay, well, basically my question is the technology that you're referring to here, could that recreate another bridge? And the reason why I broke this one of the front teeth off the bridge, and it's been glued back several times, and it just, I've been advised the only way it'll ever be corrected is to have that bridge rebuilt. So can the this technology rebuild an existing bridge?
Okay.
You don't
well. I don't want to get in a situation where you're doing, you know, practice over the radio, because, of course, that's not a good thing. But, Henry, you want to address the question about
okay,
bridge work?
Yes. There's several issues that popped into mind if you were a patient sitting in the chair that we would discuss. The first would be, why a bridge in the first place? It's true that almost all root canals are implants waiting to happen. And if implants had been placed, then you wouldn't need a bridge in the first place. Usually when a bridge is placed, it kind of sacrifices the teeth on either side, and
right.
and it overstresses, because you're asking those three teeth to do the job, in your case, of five teeth. So it's just a matter of time before the stresses cause some flexing. And as you found out, porcelain does not flex. It breaks. It fails. But to answer your question about the bridge, yes, this technology can be used. In fact, a friend of mine, Diana, at Capitola Laboratory here in Santa Cruz, she has one of these machines that has it's an adjunct to the CEREC machine, and it's called InLab, and it's for laboratories where a model is taken. So I would not image your teeth directly with that camera, but would take a model of it, and that model would then be imaged in the CEREC machine using the laboratory add-on,
uh-huh.
and then
uh-huh.
she could go ahead and create the bridge by placing that. That would make the framework, and then she would place the porcelain over it. And she is quite the artist. I am so impressed with her beautiful work.
Is it possible at this point, you were talking about implants, where basically you drill in, remove the nerve, and you put in an implanted root system, if you will, or
yes.
Tooth system. Can you do that after it's been a while?
Absolutely. Okay. If hopefully the bone is still there, but if it's not, you can certainly have augmentation where you can have additional bone placed.
Thank you very much for the call.
Yeah, I appreciate your answer.
All right. That was Tom from King City. If you'd like to join the call with questions and comments about technology, well, about teeth technology, the phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. And while I'm disseminating information, let me go ahead and say that our underwriter, Sanish Electronics, which donates money to the show and helps support KUSP, their URL is not org. It is santacruzelectronics.com, and I've made the mistake two times this month, and I want to stop doing that. So santacruzelectronics.com if you want to learn more information.
We're the geek shop,
about the place.
Santa Cruz.
So back to discussion the teeth and this milling machine. Once you're this little cappy thing that fits the person's existing structure perfectly, and one of the reasons why it fits perfectly, which is kind of unusual when you're doing the casting situations, is the casting situations, you're always going to have some kind of change in density and change in size. But with this, you're working on the final size. It's the temperature at which it's going to be used, and there isn't a change in size. So it's to the 10 micron level accuracy of what you need for the mouth.
Yes. A short story of why I got the machine. It was being presented to me, and we actually did our first restoration on my dental assistant, and she needed a crown.
That's brave. She needed a crown.
She needed a crown. And we went ahead and imaged her in the mouth and made the restoration. But I didn't really trust the machine, so I took my traditional impression, and using impression material, which is a polysiloxane material. It's a vinyl.
It's a nice, stable, really well, doesn't change size, all the stuff
exactly.
You need for dentistry. Okay.
It's the cat's meow. We have auto-mix cartridges and all the rest of it, mm-hmm. So there's no human error, hopefully. And we poured up the model. We milled the restoration. I tried the restoration on the model, and it fit so-so. Nothing fantastic. I mean, my laboratory could have done just as well. But when I tried it in her mouth, it was perfect. And that proved to me that the model was what had lost the accuracy,
uh-huh.
Not the restoration.
Uh-huh.
And I purchased the...
You did it.
Right there. Yes.
Oh,
it was
great.
It was a winner. And it has since really given me the quality of workmanship that I've been searching for many years.
Yeah. Well, who does your teeth?
I have old roommates of mine from dental school that do, but I'm searching now for another dentist who
uses a system like this.
Yes,
right? Yeah.
And I have a friend who does have the system. He's in Scotts Valley.
Go ahead. What's his name?
John Stevens.
John Stevens.
Yeah. He's a nice guy. And he's very conscientious and the like, and I'll probably be climbing into his chair eventually. I had my teeth done in gold many years ago, and this has surpassed gold as the standard.
You were telling me about, I get into the dentist office, and I've got this appointment for a dentist office, and it's one of those times in my life, I think the only time in my life, I'm going to a dentist office, and I'm excited about going there, because I'm going to learn about technology, and I'm not going to have my teeth worked on at all. So I come in, we're talking, and of course, I'm thinking about my teeth while I'm talking with you, because you just think about your teeth when you talk to dentists, and that's just how it works, right? So I'm thinking about it, and everything, but the entire time we're talking about technology, we look at your laptop, which is really cool, because it's got a 3D screen, and like all this difference, the remote cameras, and I talk to your assistant who's got the laser cutting system, which we should talk about for oral care. So we talk about a lot of technology. I'm really into it. And then we come to this camera that is an RF. It's like a flashlight, smaller than a flashlight, thin, like a big toothbrush kind of, and it transmits a full image with lights and everything to two screens in the office, one for you and one for the patient. And you're like, You put a sleeve over it, and I'm like, uh-oh, this is going in my mouth. We put it in my mouth, and right away you're like, oh, that's a problem, that's a problem, that's a problem. I'm like, oh, no. So I'm like, yes, I've got leakage, I guess is what it is. And you were saying that I had silver in my teeth, like a lot of people did. And 3 years ago or so, the dentist that I had said, get that out of there. Let's put new ceramic in there, new material in there. And you said, yeah, you got leaks all around this. And I said, yeah, I knew this because I'd recently gone to a dentist and was told that those were all bad now. And it seems like 3 years, but my other fillings lasted a lot longer than that. What's going on between the ceramic composite that you pack in versus the silver?
Well, when we were looking for a replacement material, filling material, we had silver-mercury amalgam. And
when you say we mean the dentist industry.
The dentist in general, okay. And we found that, you know, mercury was toxic, so we didn't want to play with that anymore. And not so much for the patient, you know, but dentists are exposed to it 8 hours a day. I mean,
right.
You know, so...
And you're in a situation before, when it's kind of a liquid still, and it's kind
exactly,
of...
Exactly, before it's amalgamated.
Right.
And so... A methyl methacrylate resin was developed that had little chunks, quartz in it, and it was white, so cosmetically it looked great. And we just took it for granted that we could change out the silver with the white filling material, the white
right.
resins.
It's strong, it bonds well, it does all those things you want. So a trade made sense. And it's white, which
yes.
is nice, so you don't see
beautiful.
The fillings as much. Okay.
So in the beginning there were problems because the bonding technology was not strong enough and there was, you know, leakage and delamination. Then we found out that after the bond strengths are very strong for 3 years and then they kind of fall off a cliff. And this is probably because when we start remaking walls of the teeth with the resin, it starts to flex very much like a membrane. And this constant flexing causes the leakage, the mm-hmm. percolation. So we really don't have a material that can take the place unless it is a ceramic, because the ceramics don't bend. They're strong enough to recreate the walls of a tooth, whereas the resins, we really overuse those in situations that the silver-mercury amalgam would have been okay.
Now, why is the silver-mercury amalgam, which doesn't even have a resin in there to mount the tooth, why is it doing such a good job? Doesn't it flex and change as well and cause leakage?
It does, but I feel that because of the mercury, that there's a killing zone, so to speak, around where the leakage is that keeps the bacteria down. Because I've seen some horribly... leaky amalgams with no decay around them other than they're bleeding black into the tooth. But there's no... We have a red dye called Caries Checker that we place on the tooth, and we rinse it off, and if there's any red that stays, well, we know that there's decay there. And there would many times be very little decay, and I attribute that to the mercury itself.
Making sure to kill anything that's trying to grow. All right, we got a couple calls, and I think this is just a great call from Santa Cruz. Eric, welcome to Geek Speak. What's your question?
You're talking mostly about sort of more advanced dental care. What about someone who just has, you know, they want a basic checkup? They might have a cavity or two. They don't need a crown. They don't need a root canal. Does Dr. Ramirez's practice differ from the standard dental care? And also your previous discussion just now about leakage. I mean, I've been to the dentist before and no one's ever mentioned any issues like that. Would it be advisable to go to Dr. Ramirez or some other dentist who would just check over someone's mouth for, you know, what are we missing?
Well, of course, you should be going to the dentist regularly.
No, but I mean, like, I do go to the dentist regularly,
yeah.
But no one's ever said anything about, oh, you might be leaking. Or, you know, are there other issues that...
I think leaking is the technical term for something that's... you already have a tooth, you already have some kind of work done in it, like a cavity, you know, replacement thing, and there's some problems with it. And that's when cavities need to be redone, if you will.
Yeah. Yes. One of the items that I use to help me diagnose decay, where perhaps it might be overlooked in other cases, is called the Diagnodent, and it's made by another German company called Kevo.
And is this uncommon in U.S. practice as well?
Well, it's becoming more common.
Okay.
I've had mine a couple of years now, but it just recently, within the last 2 months, received the seal of the American Dental Association as essentially the standard for determining tooth decay. In the olden days, we used to use these little sharpened explorers, and they would stick into a hole in the tooth, and we'd say, aha, you've got a cavity. But now,
and it was painful sometimes.
Perhaps, yes. And but this is a laser, and they found out that decay phosphoresces, and at the tip of it, when it bounces back, it has a little computer that calibrates how much phosphorescence happens. And the reason that they came up with this sort of a decay finder is because enamel has changed over the last few generations with the introduction of fluoride, where now the enamel is so hard that the decay happens deep down in the pits, and many times it will break through to the softer bone part of the tooth called the dentin, and then decay spreads like oil on water. But it's not readily apparent visually, nor can the explorer
with a probe.
With the probe.
Because the probe is too big for the crevice that it's trying to find it. Okay.
Exactly. So in clinical sciences, this periodical. They did a large study in Scandinavia, and they found out that the regular probing way for finding caries, the dentist missed 76% of the cavities.
Because this laser technology, you can see it. Right, it beeps at you. It tells you
exactly
what's going on.
And it's numerical also. It's from 0 to 99.
So you can ignore the weak one.
Exactly. You can say small, you know, so on and so
right.
forth. But
so there's a difference right there. You also mentioned, like, when you're probing, so basically if you go in right now for seeing if there's any cavities in your mouth, instead of you taking a pick and poking all over the place, you're going to use a laser and just kind of scan?
That's what we do.
Sounds really appealing.
Yeah. Well, the beauty also...
I don't like the metal.
I don't like the metal pokey thing, no.
Nobody does, you know.
Can I just interject a question?
Sure.
I've never had anything but the pick and, well, x-rays as well, but so are most dentists still... just using the old PIC technology?
Well, I think that many people are now getting diagnodents because it's got now the seal of approval. So it's moved out of the arena of being experimental, you know.
Jim, thank you very much for the call. I mean, we're going to continue the discussion about this topic, but thank you very much.
And his first question was, you do more than just the specialized work. I mean, you're a full...
Oh, yes, I'm a general dentist. I do... You know, just what general dentists do.
Yeah, I think kind of his question
and
was...
And cleanings for people who don't need work, right?
Yes,
right.
We have, yes, a fabulous hygienist, Pam Radowski.
Uh-huh. And you also, I mean, we'll talk about a couple of things. One of the things you mentioned, let's not get into too much, but you do digital x-raying, and the sensor on the digital x-ray is better than, or the sensor plus the software you can use, equivalent to a Photoshop thing, means that you can reduce the x-ray dosage severely, use a lot less x-rays. And it's instantaneous, so you can see a big x-ray quickly. So while you're working, you kind of use it as a tool while you're going. And since it's so much less x-rays, it's safer.
Yes, and as you mentioned with the Photoshop, the tools, we can magnify, we can colorize, we can... It's amazing.
Totally different.
Yes, and the amount of radiation is just minuscule. It's easily a tenth of what a regular film x-ray would take.
Right, the x-ray machine in the office, you're showing me the dial, and it's like there's, you know, a dial like any dial, and it's way down at the bottom, close to the 1 and 2. It's like way down there. You're like, I never go above here. Like, wow.
Exactly.
Okay, so that's different, though, you know, traditional in a lot of ways, very different in the way you're doing. Also, you're saving all these things electronically with paperwork, and you can see, like, a progression over time quickly through a computer rather than pulling up a whole bunch of transparencies and sticking them all over the walls.
And we also can write to a disc and give you your own x-rays, and they're as good as the originals.
Right.
You know,
wow.
And we use intraoral photography and all this, and all of this is easily writable.
So if you moved away, you could take that record with you?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so that's another practical difference. And now let's talk about your hygienist and also the laser you use in that room for more serious work for, as you said, not like Sean and I, but for people that have a little older teeth and maybe have some disease. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, we use a diode laser. And this is used for people with gum disease. What traditional lasers are use a jewel such as garnet or ruby to collimate the light amplification. Mm-hmm. And with the diode, they're able to create a spectra that will destroy bacteria and granulation tissue and just shine through healthy tissue and not bother it at all. So what we found is deep in the pockets, the type of bacteria that live there that cause most of the severe damage.
Down in the gum between the tooth and the gum.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Are anaerobic. And so these
anaerobic?
They live without oxygen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so they're the big bad boys of the block. And your toothbrush can't reach usually down that far. If you have gum pockets that are 3 millimeters deep and shallower, that's perfect. You can maintain yourself easily. 4 millimeters, and you can only clean 70%. So
the toothbrush brushes just won't go into
won't
that
go
crevice
down so
inside the inside the
if
room.
You've got okay. five or sixes, you're behind the eight ball.
So what happens when you're
situation? Well,
and basically age determines this, right? The older you get, the more pockets, the deeper pockets are.
Well, we don't like to think so, but I think that
there's
empirically that is
okay.
what's happening.
So go on.
So what we want to do is we want to create an area where there are no bacteria causing inflammation so that the pocket, the swelling goes down, and then you can maintain it yourself. And with good cleanings and the laser treatment, we found kind of the fountain of youth for gums, and we've had just some remarkable recoveries.
You're describing kind of like a situation where you know, a wound gets cleaned perfectly, and then I mean, that's basically what you're doing is you're getting out all the bad stuff, carve it out, and then you also burn it out to some degree. So you're making sure that it's dead at that point, or the live tissue's still alive, and the stuff that you don't want growing there is dead.
Exactly. What one of the main problems is that the mouth has tons of bacteria and will always have tons of bacteria. It's as a surgical site, it is a non-sterile site regardless of what you do.
No matter what you do. Oh, that's
yes.
Frustrating.
Yes. And so that does get in the way of healing. But if you're able to clean tartar and calculus away from the root and get rid of the anaerobic bacteria, then the body has a very, very strong situation where it can heal itself.
Wow. Okay, now, toothbrush technology, real quick, because there's some cool stuff there. I have a Sonicare. Is that a good piece of hardware?
I think the Sonicare toothbrushes are fabulous because they are ultrasonic, and the ultrasonic waves do disrupt bacterial plaque where they don't even touch because of the waves they put out.
Nice.
However, I'm not in love with the cost of the Sonicare. There's a Cybersonic, which is like on the QVC channel, I think it's a superior machine. It comes with an ultrasonic flosser. It comes with an ultrasonic tongue scraper.
All right, there you go.
This kind of stuff.
What's the name of the product?
Cybersonic.
Okay.
And we sell them at our office for $50, and you can go.
Wow, that's like half the price
exactly.
of Sonicare.
You can go down to Long's and pick up a Cybersonic for probably $130, though.
All right. We're gonna go ahead and take a call. Let's go ahead and take a call from Palm Springs. Jim, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi. I'm like 52 years old. I don't have dental insurance. Specifically, I have a cap that has, or a crown, crown. Anyway, it's one of those, and it has a hole on the outside, like
a crack.
Not a crack, like a piece fell out. So it's like a little circular hole. The tooth doesn't hurt. So I'm wondering...
Is it serious?
Yeah, it's serious.
How long can I ignore this?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I really have no choice. It's kind of like
it's
I don't
expensive.
Have insurance. I can't go in and have some dentist say, we'll put another one on.
All right, so we're going to ask someone to do that on the radio without seeing him. Is his mouth serious? Does he need work?
Yeah.
Okay. It is not uncommon for porcelain fused to metal crowns to have some of the porcelain chip and fracture off, especially if the bite's a little bit high or you happen to bite down improperly on a stone or a bone or something like that. If where that porcelain has fractured off, if there is a dark metal that's showing, then your tooth is still sealed and it's not a problem if it's not sharp and bothering your tongue. However, where there's smoke, there's fire, and you know, it's possible that you may have some leakage around the margin of the crown, which is down at the gum line most of the time.
Especially since it's taken some stress to crack the enamel.
Yes,
fake enamel.
And if you've had the crown for, you know, 15, 20 years, then it's probably approaching the end of its life cycle also. But if it was just done 3 or 5 years ago, then it's probably going to be okay.
Jim, thank you very much for the call.
You're welcome.
All right. Wow, that was better advice than I thought you could give on radio. I thought that was wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, that's great.
We're talking with Dr. Henry Ramirez. He's got a practice in Santa Cruz. We're talking about the high tech of technology of teeth. And we are running out of time very quickly here on Geek Speak.
I know, it's a great technology.
It is a great
it's
show.
Really cool
I think we'll
show.
Just have to continue it off air. Oh, well. Thank you very much for joining us. I was wondering, Henry, if there's anything else you want to touch base on very quickly. I know.
It's just simply that when CAD/CAM restorations are done, that it is very easy to have a very conservative preparation of the tooth, whereas the traditional crowns, the teeth are essentially placed in a pencil sharpener and shaved down. That is actually, it works the opposite with bonded restorations. We need to save as much enamel as possible because that's where we get our strongest bond. And so the more you save of your tooth, the better it is for you.
Dentist Henry Ramirez. You can learn more about Ramirez's practice at ramirezdds.com. Of course, the phone number, 831-423-2447. This program is supported by Family and Children's Services of Santa Cruz County. There are over 350 children in foster care in Santa Cruz County. The need for new foster families is urgent. Information about foster parenting is at 454-4375 or online at fostercare4kids. That's the number 4.com. You're listening to Geek Speak. The guest today was Henry Ramirez. The geek today was Sean Cleveland. Our producer is Maggie Cleveland. My name is Lyle Troxel. We'll be back next week, as we are every week. We're going to be talking about recycling e-waste. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. This is KUSP, Central Coast, California, KBDH San Ardo. Thank you for listening.